So the political dynamics of Greek city-states, and they're all city-states that have certain common political assumptions, the type of government you get in a city-state is very much determined by the type of military service expected by its citizens. Yet all Greeks agreed, and this is found in the earliest poems of Hesiod, Works and Days in the Theogony, is that the city-state, however the citizens are defined, whether it's the landed class who serve as hoplites, whether it's a broader-based democracy as in Athens, but the city-state itself rests on its citizens, and the city-state provides the means of ruling by laws passed by the citizens. And the Greeks have this conceit that only they live in a polis. Their citizens pass laws which they obey, and that marks them from everyone else. The rest of the world are considered barbarians, not because of some kind of cultural or racial inferiority, but because they do not live by the rule of law. They live under kings, and kings are above the law, and their subjects, to most Greeks, are slaves, douloi, because they are subjects to a master. And that political conceit, dividing the rest of the world off from the Greeks, is a fundamental perception that characterizes Greek city-states and is an important point to recall and remember as we discuss the origins, course, and results of the Peloponnesian War. The other important point I would make on this politically, and I stress very much, that is so much depended on those citizens fighting in their ranks together. And that was a type of virtue, that was a type of bravery characteristic of the Greek citizen hoplite. It meant he should practice sophrosune, moderation. The passage I read, the Spartans are so good at it because they march in step. They don't go in wildly into battle. The notion of moderation, the notion of sophrosune, that notion that comes through in Greek literature and the measured approach in Greek intellectual debate that is sometimes argued, whether it was actually practiced is another matter. I think the Greeks often got quite excited in their debates, at least the Athenians. Nonetheless, that is a notion that is closely associated with that type of hoplite warfare. It is not the individual warrior who counts. Tyrtaeus, writing in the 7th century BC, a Spartan poet, says, "A man that I really respect is a man who stands in the battle line. Can be short in stature, stocky, a little bow-legged." It's apparently a self-portrait. But he has the courage to stand with his fellow citizens. And should a fellow citizen fall, and you're in the second rank, you move forward and replace that vacant place so the line doesn't break. And that whole notion of bravery is very important. Socrates, remembered as a great philosopher in Athens, he could point to service in hoplite battles to the jury and win sympathy. Everyone was expected to serve. And that's an important point to stress. When wars were voted, that meant the assembly went to war. This was not some sort of abstract voting of a professional army. The citizens, initially, they all marched off to war together. And so that is an important point always to recall when we discuss the diplomatic and political issues leading to the Peloponnesian War. This was not some kind of abstract vote. Now, the Peloponnesian War, the third point in this lecture, the Peloponnesian War significantly will change or accelerate changes, I suspect, that were already in progress. Many scholars, especially Victor Hansen, who has studied Greek hoplite warfare, wrote a very important book on it called The Western Way of War, he and others have argued that Greek infantry combat, as devised in the Archaic Age, that is the period from 750 to 480 BC, that early period that saw the emergence of the Greek city-state, that form of warfare, of infantry combat, comes to characterize Western warfare ever since. It was also associated with decisive battle. Some would argue that it is likely connected with the West's stress on discipline and training, and ultimately on technology and augmenting the power of soldiers, who will fight far more effectively as soldiers rather than as warriors. And that distinction between soldiers and warriors, that is individual bravery as opposed to the collective will of disciplined soldiers on the battlefield, that is a point often traced back to this Greek civic warfare. I think the position is overdrawn, but there's a great deal of virtue to that. One can still needs to study the Assyrian army in order to verify that. I think the Assyrians would have a discipline certainly comparable to the Greeks, and it probably goes back even earlier into Near Eastern armies.